Our first speaker this morning is Stefan Morris from Holborn's. We've had Stefan before, actually attending our forum, so quite a number of us know Stefan well. So he has the envious task of talking about furlough and redundancy. Obviously, as we move sort of forward, we hope that we'll avoid the negative, but we have to be prepared for it. So I think it's an important topic actually to sort of pick up on as we move through the next number of weeks and months, because it will be something that may will come up to a greater or lesser extent, hopefully lesser, but we'll see how we go. Stefan, over to yourself.
Thanks very much, Andrew. So for anybody who doesn't know us, we Halborns are the BMF's employment lawyers, and we now act for 40 members. So I'm speaking to members on a daily basis about the employment law issues that are affecting them. And unfortunately, I'm now advising a lot of members on redundancy procedures. So clearly nobody wants to be involved in a redundancy process if they can possibly help it. But if you are, it's important clearly to deal with it as fairly as possible. So I'm going to share some pointers this morning, which hopefully will assist if you do find yourself needing to carry out a redundancy process, particularly whilst on furlough. If we can have the next slide, please. So starting with, can I start a redundancy process whilst employees are on furlough? So for a while, there was some doubt about this, but now it's pretty clear that the short answer to that question is yes. So government guidance has now made it clear that, the government guidance for employees says that your employer can still make you redundant whilst on furlough or afterwards. So on that. There's also some ACAS guidance that's been produced that says that other formal processes, such as disciplinary processes, can continue whilst on furlough. So on that basis, we're confident that if you need to, you can start a redundancy process, even though employees are on furlough. That ACAS guidance I mentioned does say that participation in those sort of formal processes whilst on furlough has to be voluntary. Clearly, it's unlikely that you're going to get employees volunteering to be involved in a redundancy consultation. But in reality, we think this means that an employee hasn't actively objected to the procedure considering whilst on furlough. If they do object, and actually we haven't had any employees putting forward any objections thus far in terms of the procedures that we've been advising on, and you can't resolve that objection for one reason or another, it might be necessary to unfurlough the employee to carry on with the process. But as I say, hopefully that should be very unlikely. It is also clear that managers and directors who are planning the process and carrying out the scoring can't remain on furlough, because basically that counts as work, and obviously you can't work whilst you're on furlough. In terms of companions, however, again, the government guidance has confirmed that employee or trade union representatives who are acting as a companion during a redundancy process or, in fact, another formal employment process can remain on furlough, so there's no need to unfurlough them. But we would recommend generally that you keep a record of any activities carried out by employees whilst they're on furlough, just in case you are audited by HMRC in the future. You then got the evidence that you need to show that the employee wasn't breaching the furlough rules whilst they were continuing on furlough, but still carrying out some activities for you, like being a companion. Can we have the next slide, please? So should you start a redundancy process now or wait until the end of furlough? So again, there have been contrary views on this point. The purpose, obviously, of the furlough scheme is to give businesses some breathing space and to try and avoid you having to make employees redundant. And some commentators have suggested that this means that redundancy and furlough are mutually exclusive and alternatives, rather than you being able to start a redundancy process whilst you're on furlough. Well, our view is that whilst the timing of a redundancy exercise is something you clearly should consider, you don't have to wait until the end of the furlough process if it's clear that redundancies are going to be required. You are obviously likely to get employees asking whilst they can't continue on furlough until the end of the scheme, rather than being made redundant now. So that's obviously something you'll have to think about in advance of carrying out the process. And it's obviously necessary to consider the pros and cons of waiting until the end of the furlough process or proceeding now. So in some cases, it might genuinely be too soon to tell whether you're going to need to make redundancies because the economic picture is too uncertain. But in other cases, and in quite a lot of cases, I think, it's already clear that orders and pipeline are so considerably down that redundancies are going to be inevitable, and that delaying those redundancy conversations and redundancy procedures would simply be delaying the inevitable. And it's also obviously the case that as from August, businesses who have employees on furlough are going to have to start contributing to the cost of that furlough scheme. And therefore, that's obviously something that may factor into the timing of any redundancy exercise. So in our view, in many cases, furlough isn't going to be a realistic alternative or a solution to a redundancy problem. Where you already know that you're not going to need employees back, there's no need to delay starting that redundancy process until the end of the furlough scheme. There are also financial advantages potentially to giving employees notice whilst on furlough. So firstly, if employees serve out that notice entirely during furlough, you can claim some or all of the notice pay back from the coronavirus job retention scheme. It may be that you have to top up that notice pay to 100%, and we'll come onto the details on that shortly. But it is also clear that you can't recover any element of any statutory redundancy payments under the coronavirus job retention scheme. On the positive front, though, in terms of cash flow, in many cases, you will be able to calculate that redundancy payment if you need to make redundancies based on the reduced furlough salary rather than their full salary. And therefore, the employee will be getting a lower redundancy payment. And again, that's going to save to the business some cash. You also need to consider as part of these discussions whether you can still run a fair process whilst employees are on furlough. So obviously, a lot of the process is not going to be face-to-face as it might be otherwise. You know, can you still run a fair process? And we'll come on to some details on that in a minute. So next slide, please. So based on our experiences of redundancy processes during furlough so far, here are our top three tips if you do have to carry out a redundancy process. So first of all, having transparent and well thought through reasons why you need to consider redundancies now is really important. So a fair redundancy process, as you know, is all about exploring alternatives to ending an employee's employment. We've been dealing with a client recently where their redundancy reason is we're being told by our industry body, not the BMF incidentally, that there will be a downturn. So that's a bit like saying there might be a recession. It's just not a compelling enough reason to justify redundancy at this stage. So you need to be more specific about the reasons redundancies are required now. So what are the metrics? You know, what's the budget, what's the forecast, what's the order book? The more detail you can give as part of the process, the less likely you are to be challenged by employees about it. Second tip is when talking to an individual about a redundancy, you need to be clear why it is that you can't continue to furlough them rather than making them redundant. So you need to explain and record clearly your reasons for taking the decision to start the redundancy process now. So one possible role might be that you know now that their role is no longer to be required, even after the furlough period, and you're reluctant to use the public purse to effectively subsidise their employment when there's no realistic opportunity of return. And then thirdly, don't just select those on furlough for redundancy. So the reason for that is, as you know, in order to select employees fairly for redundancy, you need to carry out a fair and reasonable selection process. And it's unlikely that your selection process in terms of who to put on furlough and who to retain in the business meets that fair and reasonable test in terms of ticking the boxes, being comprehensive enough. And therefore, if you simply select those employees who are on furlough leave for redundancy, it's going to be argued by those employees that you predetermined the decision to make them redundant, which potentially obviously undermines the fairness of the decision to make them redundant. If I can have the next slide, please. So assuming you decide to go ahead with the redundancy process whilst on furlough, what are the practicalities in terms of actually consulting with employees? It's obviously not likely that you're going to be carrying out the consultation in the usual face-to-face manner as you would do in sort of normal times. And how do you ensure fairness when consulting remotely with employees? So the first thing you need to think about, obviously, is getting in touch with those employees in the first place. You clearly can't use their work emails. They won't be accessing their work emails. They shouldn't be accessing their work emails whilst on furlough. Do you have current and up-to-date personal email addresses for all of the affected employees that you need to contact? If not, you're probably going to have to send them a letter unless you want to ring around every single employee that's affected. In terms of employees on sick leave, so those who are either on long-term sick leave or on coronavirus-related sick leave, you can still consult with employees whilst on sick leave, and in fact, employees on maternity leave, but you you're probably going to have to adjust the process. So you might need to delay the consultation or build more time into the consultation until the employee is sufficiently recovered to participate. You might need even to do it on the basis of written correspondence if they're too unwell to participate in a video call or a phone call. You also obviously need to consider the facilities the employee has at home in terms of being able to participate in the process. So do they have a private space, for example, at home that they can sit in and participate in the meetings? In terms of facilities, do they have a laptop, iPad or mobile, which is suitable for video call? Do they have appropriate Wi-Fi and technology to be heard? Or alternatively, would discussing the redundancy on the phone or over email provide them with a fair and more reasonable opportunity to participate properly in the process? You obviously need to think about disabled employees and those who are shielding. So if they have a disability, which might put them at a disadvantage if you're using technology to conduct the consultation, do you need to make reasonable adjustments to that process? So do you need to provide them with more breaks, for example, more time to think, or do you need to provide an agenda or a written summary in advance? Can I have the next slide, please? Yeah, and the next slide, thank you. In relation to childcare, clearly if employees have got kids at home that they're expecting to be looking after, and they're participating in a redundancy consultation process, that's going to provide them with additional stress. So do they need to make arrangements for childcare in order to attend the meeting properly without being distracted by children running around? In terms of companions, so will they be able to secure a companion to provide appropriate support? They might need more time with that companion to prepare because they're not going to be able to, you know, have a one-to-one meeting with them as they would do under normal circumstances. Or they might even need you to suggest a companion for them or provide them with contact details for a companion they'd like to support them in the meeting. Are you willing to allow the individual or a family member? So do you want to be more flexible than you might otherwise be in terms of allowing employees to bring companions? So technically speaking, they're only allowed to bring another employee or a trade union representative. Do you want to consider potentially relaxing those rules to allow them to bring a family member or somebody in their household along to the meeting? It's not a legal requirement, as I mentioned, but if you do that, you'd want to set parameters in terms of confidentiality and who that person could be. So particularly, you don't want that person to be a lawyer, basically. And then recording the meeting. So obviously technology makes it really easy to record a meeting, but actually ACAS guidance suggests that you shouldn't be recording meetings, and this is a particularly good reason to do so. And if you do decide to record a meeting, you'll need to confirm this in advance with the employee and ensure that you're complying with the protections in relation to the Data Protection Act and the GDPR in terms of what you do that recording after the meeting is finished. We can have the next slide, please. So I'm now going to come on to the financials in relation to how you calculate notice pay and statutory redundancy payment for employees that you do end up making redundant whilst on furlough. So notice pay, in most cases, the notice pay will be based on the pay the employee is due under the contract at the time they're given notice. So in many cases, the employee won't be entitled to more than the furlough pay that they're receiving. So if they serve out the whole of their notice whilst on furlough, in many cases you can just pay them the furlough pay that they're entitled to receive during that period and recover all of that from the government as long as the notice doesn't take them beyond the 31st of July. So the legal position in terms of whether they're entitled to only furlough pay or full pay is a bit complicated, but largely depends on whether the employee is entitled to only statutory minimum notice. So as you may know, statutory minimum notice is basically a week's notice per year of employment, complete year of employment, capped at 12 weeks. And if the employee is only entitled to statutory minimum notice, then in most cases, you will have to pay them full pay during notice. So you, in most cases, you're paying them 80% under furlough, you'd be paying 100% of the notice pay during the notice period, and you'd be paying the 20% required to top up from the 80 to 100, and you could still recover the 80% from the government. Conversely, if they're entitled to more than statutory minimum notice, so you've got, example, an employee with 2 years service, but they're due a month's notice, then they're obviously entitled to more than such a minimum notice. You can just pay them the furlough pay they're due during their notice period. We do need to bear in mind that that produces a slightly unattractive result in terms of fairness, and it may therefore be the case that tribunals, if employee does challenge it, are going to try and find a way to ensure employees receive 100% of their notice pay during the notice period. So there is a risk that an employee would challenge this and they bring a tribunal claim, and you know, despite the law being pretty clear on these points, the tribunal finding a way of ensuring that the employee actually gets 100% of pay rather than the 100%. But hopefully the worst case scenario is that you have to pay 20% and the job retention scheme pays the other 80%. In relation to payments in lieu of notice, where you're ending an employee's employment immediately and paying them a lump sum instead of having them serve out their notice, it's very unlikely, we think, that you'll be able to recover any payments in lieu of notice under the job retention scheme. And therefore, obviously, there's an incentive to have employees serve out their notice whilst on furlough. You are able to tell employees to use up their holiday pay, use up their holiday during any notice period they serve out. In that case, you do need to pay 100% of the pay that they'd normally be entitled to for any days they're on holiday. So you can either rely on a provision in their contract, or failing that, you can give the employee twice as much notice as the period of holiday that you want them to take. So if you want them to take a week's holiday, you have to give them 2 weeks' notice in order to do that. And then statutory redundancy payments. So statutory redundancy payments, as you know, are calculated in relation to a formula based on length of service, age, and weekly pay, which is capped at £538 a week. So in most cases, you can calculate the statutory redundancy payment based on their furlough pay. So as long as they've got what's called normal working hours, so if they've got hours specified under the contract, so if the contract says they're required to do 40 hours a week, then that's normal working hours. As long as they have normal working hours under the contract, then you can calculate the statutory redundancy payment based on the pay they are receiving during furlough. If we can please have the next slide. And then finally, just a couple of other things to think about in terms of furlough and redundancy. So you can still ask for volunteers for redundancy when you're running a redundancy process whilst on furlough, and furlough doesn't change that. But obviously bear in mind that you might get the wrong people volunteering, and that the people you want to retain might volunteer for redundancy. Just to flag up the obligations in relation to collective consultation. So if you're likely to make 20 or more redundancies at an establishment, which generally means a site, so one of your sites, you're likely to have to make 20 or more redundancies, then there are additional obligations in terms of collective consultation, electing employee representatives, notifying the government, etc. And if you don't comply with those obligations, then there's a risk of a criminal sanction in relation to the failure to notify the government, in particular a criminal sanction for the director. So it's obviously really crucial to get advice on that if you think there might be a risk that you might need to collectively consult before the individual consultation stage. Maternity leave, you can still consult with employees on maternity leave as part of this process, but employees on maternity leave do have priority for any suitable alternative vacancies there may be in the business. Probably aren't any suitable alternative vacancies, but if there are, then employees on maternity have first pick of those. And then finally, just to flag up effectively the closing date of the furlough scheme for new entrants. So in order to be eligible for the coronavirus job retention scheme, the latest an employee can be put on furlough is the 10th of June. And that's because they have to have been on furlough for at least 21 calendar days by the 30th of June in order to be eligible for the scheme. So if they've been furloughed in April, then that's fine. You can furlough them again in July if you need to. But if they've never been furloughed at all, then the 10th of June is the last date that you can furlough them for the first time. And next slide, please. If we do, if any of you do need support with redundancy or other employment law issues, there are solutions available that we provide through the BMF. So first of all, the Get Ready, Get Set, Get Going packages. So these are flexible packages that we can put together for each business to support you in relation to redundancy or other issues, and they can be tailored to your individual needs. There's the Intelligent Employment Plus service provided again through the BMF. So that's an annual package of support. And in particular, it includes unlimited advice from me and my colleagues who are qualified employment lawyers, plus access to all the documents you need as part of a redundancy process or other issues in terms of the employment law journey. And then finally, just to mention outplace support. So this is a great, so this is to basically to help the employee prepare for their next role. So CV writing, interview skills, identifying basically what role they want to go into next. And it can be a great way to minimize the risk of any claims by supporting departing employees in the next steps and helping them with resources in terms of securing another job. And then final slide, please. Also, just to mention the BMF Employment Law Helpline, which is provided by Halborn. So this is a free service as part of your BMF membership. You're entitled to 15 minutes of free employment law advice from us. So if you have any questions that are not covered today, then do feel free, please, to give the BMF Employment Law Helpline a ring. So I think we've got... Do we want to do questions now or at the end, Andrew?
Yeah, I'll pick up a couple now. Stefan, just could you sort of cover that point again, just about the 10th of June sort of deadline point? Is it the case that if you have previously furloughed an individual, you can still furlough them after the 10th of June date? Is it only if you haven't furloughed them before that date that you can't?
Yes, that's exactly right. So it's only if you've never furloughed them at all, the last chance for you to do so is the 10th of June. If you furloughed them in April or May and then unfurloughed them and you want to furlough them again in July, for example, then that's fine. But if you want to do it for the first time, then the 10th of June is the last time that you can do so.
Okay. Just another question. I think you have covered it, but I just want to make sure that it's covered again. So, questions, can you confirm if redundancy pay can be legally calculated at the furlough 80% rate?
Yes, in most cases. If the employee has normal working hours, then their redundancy payment will be calculated on the pay they're due under the contract at the point at which they are made redundant. If they're on furlough, then you can calculate that statutory redundancy payment based on their furlough payment.
One final one we'll pick up here, Stefan, then we'll see if we pick up any up at the end. Again, I would say to everyone that please keep feeding the questions through because we can get them answered and sent out to people afterwards anyway. So final one for now, Stefan, is notice pay. Can you explain again the difference between needing to pay full pay or furlough pay?
Sure. Okay, so this basically, in most cases, boils down to whether the employee is entitled to, how much notice the employee is entitled to under their contract of employment. So if they're entitled to only statutory minimum notice, so that's a week per year of employment capped at 12 weeks, if they're only entitled to statutory minimum notice, then in most cases, you're going to have to pay them full pay during the notice period, although you can still reclaim the 80%. From the government under their retention scheme. If they're entitled to more than statutory minimum notice, so at least a week more than statutory minimum notice, then you can only pay them the furlough pay that they're due. You don't have to top it up to 100%.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Stefan. I'm going to move swiftly on. I say to everyone, keep feeding the questions through. If we don't have time at the end to pick them up, we will get them answered and put out to you in some shape or form. Through the guys in BMF. So, Stefan, thank you very much.